Hey, Zach here of Third String Podcast. Just a quick reminder, please rate and review us in Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps us to build a great community around Third String, and we're really happy with the community that we're building. We also love hearing from listeners. I think that's probably the very best thing about running a podcast, but we don't hear from listeners often enough. So if you want to talk to us or drop us a note, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Third String Pod. And remember, that is at 3RD String Pod. You can also send us an email, thirdstringpod@gmail.com. You can message us directly in the Anchor app. And you can also find loads of great written content on medium.com/thirdstring. And once again, that's 3RD string. So go to Medium, go to Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, somewhere you can talk to us, leave us a note, drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. All right, now onto the podcast. All right, welcome back to Third String Podcast. We've got a lot of stuff going on in the sports world right now. I saw that Bama's QB Tua Tagovailoa just injured his thumb. I saw that Trae Young declared for the draft. I saw that Kyrie Irving's knee is going bad and he's looking for a second opinion. So lots of stuff going on, but we're going to talk about none of that. We instead are going to talk about March Madness. So I'm Zach. I'm here with Pete. Pete, welcome to Third String.
Thanks. Good to be back, my friend.
Always, man. And we are joined on this special edition of Third String Podcast by Josh Goldman. So if you've been on our website recently, medium.com/thirdstring, you saw that Josh wrote this great piece. Josh is a lifelong UVA fan, and his piece is called Why a Historic NCAA Loss Made Me a Prouder Fan. And if you've not been living under a rock, you know that he's talking about the University of Maryland Baltimore County Retrievers upsetting the Cavaliers in the first round of the tournament, the first ever time that a 16 seed has upset a 1 seed. Josh, as a lifelong Cavs fan, very frustrated about that. But he had some good words to say about that, and we asked him on to talk to us a little bit more about that. So Josh, welcome to the show. Give us a 20-second overview. Who is Josh Goldman?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, both of you. It's great to be on. Just a little background on me. I live in the Washington, D.C. area, so also a Nationals, Capitals, Wizards, Redskins fan. And I work in communications by day, but a big sports fan, and I'm happy to join you guys.
Well, we're really glad to have you on, man. I want to first ask you this question, the softball question that you basically wrote a long piece for us about. How did you feel as a UVA fan watching this team be the first ever 1 seed to lose to a 16 seed in March Madness?
You know, what's really interesting about the game was that my feelings afterward, I think probably because it was a blowout in the end, you know, they ended up losing by 20 points. It really wasn't competitive, you know, after the, 5 minutes left in the second half. I think everybody knew that the upset was actually coming. So I think that in thinking about it, and I read some other things that other UVA fans had to say as well, is that the Syracuse loss in the 2016 NCAA tournament in the Elite Eight was actually one that hurt more because they were so close to the Final Four that year. They had a 14-point lead at halftime that year, and they ended up blowing the game and losing by 7. It was definitely disappointing. It was upsetting to be going down in history as the first number one seed to ever lose to a number 16 seed. And, you know, people are calling it one of the greatest upsets in not just college basketball history, but sports history, which I don't know if I'm ready to say that, but it's certainly historic.
Yeah, I like that you brought up the point about Syracuse and that Elite Eight loss. So you're right. It's historic. People I've seen comparing it from everything to the U.S. beating the Soviet Union in the 1980 miracle to the historic Red Sox come from behind and the Yankees imploding in the playoffs in 2003. But what I want to talk about is kind of hitting on the article you wrote specifically on Tony Bennett. Josh, you and I have talked a couple times about how you feel about Tony Bennett. Zach Eshaw and I have talked about on the podcast that we think he's one of the best coaches in the country. And I don't think there's a lot of question about that. But going forward, the thing that I really liked that you hit on in your piece with Tony Bennett are kind of the pillars that he brings to the UVA program, specifically the humility, passion, unity, servanthood, and thankfulness. I think we can all agree Tony Bennett is a great dude. But in the ACC, in the NCAA tournament going forward, there's been some questions, especially after this year, if the Tony Bennett system is working and if it's something that can really excel in NCAA basketball. Is it just so different than what anyone else sees that it might not even be sustainable? Kind of what are your thoughts on the program going forward? Where do they go from here? I don't think we're questioning that this is going to be a dominant program in the ACC here for the next long while Tony Bennett's there. But where do you see the program going here in the next couple of years?
I think one of the things that I definitely want to hit on is something else that he says a lot about the players that he recruits, which I didn't put in the article, but he has said several times, which is that he doesn't just want players he can win with. He wants players he can lose with, too. And I think really what it all comes down to is building a team and a team mentality. You see a lot of times in the NCAA, these one and done players, you know, typically the blue bloods in college basketball have a lot of players who come in for 1 year and then they immediately go to the NBA because of the rule that was set in place that they have to spend 1 year between high school and the NBA before they can play professionally. So I think what's different about UVA than maybe some of the other big time performing schools is that there really is this team mentality. These players come together and they have an idea that they're going to play together for a while. And so I think part of what makes it unique is that they can all rally around these pillars that the coach has put down before them. And if they don't adhere to that, they're off the team. You know, they had a transfer last year who joined the team. He played in one game and then he was kicked off the team for violating team rules. He was projected to be one of their better players last year. And Tony Bennett said, look, if you're not going to buy into what I'm doing here, then you're off the team. And so I think in terms of your question of what they're going to do moving forward, they're probably going to return most of the players minus the seniors. So they will feel the loss of Isaiah Wilkins, who was the ACC Defensive Player of the Year, and Devin Hall, who was on the All-ACC defensive team. So they're definitely going to feel those losses. But they're going to return Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome and Jack Salt and Mamadi Diakite. These are all players who played key roles throughout the season. So I think moving forward, the team's going to be fine. Those guys all have a couple more years left in school. And it seems like they're going to buy in to playing 4 years at the school, which is, I think, a little bit unique.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I was listening to Bill Simmons' podcast today, and he was suggesting that what will eventually happen in NCAA is we'll see one and done go away, and we'll move more towards a system like baseball has now, where you're either drafted right out of high school or you have to play at least 2 years in college. So I hope he's right. I think that'd be a good thing for both sports, both the NBA and the NCAA, if he is right. If that becomes the standard that one and done's gone, do you think that increases the chances of this UVA model being successfully exported elsewhere to other programs around the country?
I think another thing that makes the UVA model unique is the emphasis on defense. I mean, that's what was talked about throughout most of the season. They were the number one rated defense, and right behind them was Cincinnati. Both teams have since lost in the NCAA tournament. And I think that that makes it unique in a whole other way. But in terms of the one and done's going away, I don't know if other people are going to, I don't think that necessarily will make other teams like Virginia. I think that it really depends on the leader at the top and the players that end up coming to play. And if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure that the one and done rule was instituted by the NBA. Is that right?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It was a David Stern policy.
So I kind of hope that goes away, because you end up getting players playing college basketball who don't really seem to want to be there sometimes,
yeah, totally.
Which kind of frustrates me. you know, like Marvin Bagley should be in the NBA right now, but he played a year at Duke and, you know, they're doing fine. But sometimes it just seems like they're going to put up stats and they're going to be ready to move on right away. So I kind of hope that we move more towards a team mentality. For me, the reason that I really love college basketball is because they're playing for the passion. And when you lose that, I feel like you're losing a little bit of what makes the sport great.
You make some great points there. And let me just caveat that I think it's worth throwing out that, what are we now, 3 nights after that loss? You are handling this so much better than 99% of sports fans out there. So thanks for taking an objective eye to this. Obviously, you and I both watch a lot of ACC basketball, and it's been something to watch UVA. But I kind of want to pull the thread on what you mentioned with some of the other programs. So I'm thinking of the still maybe not historic, but unbelievable meltdowns by programs like Arizona, Cincinnati, Xavier, a lot of programs who we thought would go pretty far in this NCAA tournament, even though it'd been kind of a crazy year. What, aside from UVA on Friday night, to you as a big college basketball fan, Josh, really stood out as kind of the biggest surprise after the round of 64 and the round of 32 after that first weekend?
I think the biggest surprise for me was Michigan State losing to Syracuse. Syracuse was not a team that played well in ACC play, and they're not a team that played well down the stretch either. And to come out and beat a pretty good Michigan State team with some pretty good players on it was really surprising. Michigan State just couldn't find a way around the zone, and they just couldn't get it together. And so I was shocked that Michigan State lost at that level.
Yeah, I don't think any of us expected it to not be Michigan State Duke this weekend coming up. I think that was kind of the big selection, is who do you take in the Sweet 16 to make it to the Final Four out of that bracket, because we all thought that would be it. And they'd probably steamroll Kansas, one of those two teams. So I agree, very surprising. You know, for how many times Tom Izzo and Jim Boeheim have played, it's not like Jim Boeheim is playing a different defense. He's been playing the zone for 30 years at Syracuse. But there's something about him in the tournament. We talked about it a week and a half ago coming out of the first four. He is a force to be reckoned with. Zach, how about you? What was your biggest surprise?
So I would have to say, I mean, I think Michigan State, I had them in my Final Four when we talked about this about a week ago. So that was a big surprise to me. To me, the bigger one, though, was A&M over the Tar Heels by 21 points. I mean, that game was not even close. The Tar Heels were never in it. And I think that was one that I never saw coming.
Yeah, that was surprising as well. I think a lot of people thought it was kind of the Tar Heels versus Michigan for that final four spot. Coming out of that region. I'd also like to point out, so a team who I had losing in the round of 64, which is Nevada, who I thought would be okay, but not great, not only making it out of the round of 64 into the round of 32, but going on a 38-4 run to beat Cincinnati at the end of that game, coming out of, I think, the craziest bracket that we've seen in a long time out there in the West region. So we have UVA going down as number one, Cincinnati going down as number two, Tennessee going down as number three, as well as Arizona going down as number four. That region has just been the most ridiculous one I can remember in March Madness, but I was not giving Nevada the time of day in this tournament, and they didn't look good in the first half of that game, but they certainly looked good in the second half. So pretty surprising there, I thought. So not necessarily the matchups we were expecting coming up this weekend, but what matchups are you guys looking forward to? Josh, we'll start with you.
One thing I want to say, too, in regards to your point about Cincinnati losing, especially really in the second half of that game, is a problem that UVA had as well, which is, When you play really good defense 99% of the time, if another team gets hot shooting, there's only so much you can do about it. I think that's really one of the main problems the University of Virginia had a lot of defensive breakdowns in the game they lost to UMBC, but UMBC just shot the ball really well. I mean, they made half of their three-pointers, and they made 12 of them. That's going to be hard to beat on any given day,
yeah,
no absolutely. Matter how good your defense is. And so Cincinnati, the same thing. If you're going to give up 38 points, you know, and only score four, they say defense wins championships, which is true, but you have to have an offense that goes along with it. And so I think these teams that are really defensively minded, if they don't have the offense to complement, and Peter, this is something you and I have talked about with UVA. They really just don't have a person who they can go to. They don't have a Trae Young. They don't have a Marvin Bagley. They don't have one of these guys that they can just give the ball to and score. And that's a problem. When your defense breaks down, you need someone who can get you back into the game. And I think the same thing happened with Cincinnati.
Yeah, valid.
But with regards to your questions about which matchup I'm most excited about, I think there are two. The first is Syracuse and Duke. I'm really interested to see how these teams match up in the postseason, especially because they both play zone defense. I'll be curious to see how that works in either of their favors. You know, Duke has two big men who are really good. So if Duke can break the Syracuse zone, I think they're gonna win in a blowout. The other game I'm really excited to see is Loyola Chicago and Nevada. I really am just buying into the whole Loyola Chicago Cinderella story with Sister Jean, their unofficial mascot at this point. And I really love their story. And I think it's going to be an interesting matchup. I mean, you have two pretty low-seeded teams matching up for a spot in the Elite Eight, two mid-majors, and it'll be interesting to see who comes out on top there.
Yeah, I agree. Zach, how about you?
Yeah, I was going to say Loyola and Nevada as well. I think also for the reasons of the Cinderella story, I was going to mention Sister Jean. I mean, all the things that Josh mentioned. So I'll just choose a different matchup. I'm looking at Villanova, West Virginia. Villanova, obviously the now presumptive favorite to win the tournament after Virginia exited. And they're playing against West Virginia. And I think this matchup is going to be tougher than a lot of people think. West Virginia, second in turnover margin, plus 5.3 a game, 10th in forced turnovers, 14 in steals and block shots, so they're really good defensively. And they're pulling down 14 offensive rebounds a game, which is good for fourth nationally. I think they're going to give Villanova a challenge. Bob Huggins is 3-3 against the Villanova's coach, whose name, what's his name? His name's escaping me right now. Jay Wright, right?
Jay Wright.
Yeah. So he's 3-3 against Jay Wright. I think this will be a good matchup, and I think we have a good chance of an upset here. What about you, Pete?
I agree. I was looking at that Villanova, West Virginia. I think Javon Carter is going to be a lot of fun to watch. I'm a huge Jay Wright fan, but at the same time, that Bob Huggins press is impressive, if I can say that. So I'm looking forward to that one. Honestly, the other one I'm looking forward to that I didn't expect to look forward to is Kansas-Clemson. So I'll be honest, I didn't have Clemson getting by Auburn, let alone at one point, what was a 40-point game there on Sunday night as the tournament was winding down for the weekend. I think Kansas-Clemson will be a fascinating game. I think it's going to be a lot of offense. Neither team plays a particularly good defense. And honestly, in this tournament, more than anything else so far, I would argue outside of the Syracuse game, it's really been those big offensive powerhouses that have really succeeded and really done well in the tournament so far. So I'm excited. I like Brad Brunell down there at Clemson. Obviously, the job that has been done at Kansas this year with Bill Self, Eshan brought it up a couple weeks ago that this team, no one was even picking them to win the conference, let alone go far in the tournament this year. It was supposed to be a big down year for Kansas. And yet again, Kansas is a powerhouse and a lot of fun to watch. So I think that's going to be a better game than anyone's given it credit for. I would like to ask you guys kind of one final question from my seat before I turn it back over to you guys, just something to think about. So every year we talk about kind of the two or three big conferences in college basketball, and I think we can all agree the ACC is normally well up there. But the second and third tier conferences are always kind of in the mix, and I would argue this year more than any other year, I think we could say the SEC is the second best conference in basketball based on their showing this year. You guys disagree or agree with that point?
You know, it's a good question. You know, I don't know. I think that who would you have first, ACC or Big 12?
I'm taking ACC then Big 12. I think normally we put the Big 10 in there number three, and then maybe the SEC fifth behind the Pac 12. The Pac 12 having a catastrophic year in football and basketball.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, Based on the season, I guess you're right. Yeah, the SEC had a pretty good showing this year, and so far in the tournament, they've done okay for themselves. I think that the last thing I read was, if I'm remembering correctly off the top of my head, In the Sweet 16, we have four ACC teams that are going to have to cannibalize themselves to get to the Elite Eight and Final Four. I think three of them are in the same bracket.
Correct.
And or in the same region. And then four teams from the Big 12. But, you know, I think we saw some underperformance from Tennessee. I was kind of hoping for more from them. And Missouri as well. I know people were talking about the return of Porter and seeing if that was going to do anything. They ended up losing in the first round there. But, you know, Kentucky's, don't sleep on Kentucky. I think that they, you know, they always seem to find their stride in March Madness. So we'll see how far they can go.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Pac-12 is not the second best conference in college basketball. I will have to say, though, I still think the Big 12 is a little better than the SEC. It's close. It's probably closer than it has been historically, but Big 12 still with four teams represented here. I mean, West Virginia is strong. Texas Tech is pretty strong. Kansas. So I think the Big 12 still has an edge over the SEC, but I think the margin is slimmer than years past.
Yeah, I'll agree with you. Isn't it? I don't know if it's sad for college basketball or what, but we're talking about some blue bloods again. We weren't talking about them as much walking into the tournament.
True.
But five seed Kentucky right there, Duke right there. I mean, all of these teams who we pretend every year like it's not going to be Coach K and Coach Cal getting deep into the tournament, and look who's waiting for us per usual in the bracket.
Who would have seen that coming?
I have one question. I have one question for you both before we wrap up here. You know, there's been a lot made about the, you know, we started off talking about the upset of Virginia and, you know, from the school that most people had not heard of or given much attention to. And I've seen some people writing here and there that upsets like that maybe should give some pause to the selection committee and say, maybe we should have more mid-majors in the tournament. They really make it exciting, especially when they can upset these heavily favored teams. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that this is just another year and we're always going to have upsets like that? Or should they consider putting more teams? Like, I heard you guys talking about St. Mary's getting left out. I mean, could they provide something that we're not seeing? Or is it really all about the TV ratings that you get from these bigger schools?
Well, I think the reality is it really is about all the TV ratings, but I'm very sympathetic to a school that wants to write its own Cinderella story. And we talk about this a lot when we talk about college football and how college football needs an expanded playoff to allow for teams like UCF, which is still sore about not getting an invite to the playoff. And I am generally in favor of giving all of these teams a chance. So I think if the selection committee can err on the side of letting in the mid-majors, I'm all for it. What do you think, Pete?
I'm going to disagree with you, my friend. I think that the tournament, I actually love the first four concept. I think normally they're awful games, but we've gotten some great competitors out of the first four. And you look at the first time that they had the first four with VCU, with Shaka Smart, making that incredible run. What was that, 2010, 2011? That was fantastic. I just worry that we are going to start not necessarily diluting the brand, but the more we expand it, yes, the more we open ourselves up to huge upsets and UMBC, whose website crashes on a Friday night during the round of 64 because literally no one knows what college they are outside of the state of Maryland. I think we still, in a way, though, have to guard the brand. And yeah, we hate that it's the Blue Bloods, the Kentuckys, the Dukes of the world. But at the same time, I'm just hesitant to open it up. I've seen people lobbying for as large as 96. And at that point, I think the entire season is almost just March Madness. And we're looking to eliminate teams so early. The tournament has to stretch out over so many weeks that I don't think it will be as fun, that we'll expect the upsets more than we'll hope for them. Because even the Dukes and UNCs and Kentuckys of the world are going to struggle every year to win nine straight. And I just worry that by the national championship, these kids are going to be so tired that it won't be as much fun. But I love that we went to the first four concept. I really do. I think even though those Tuesday, Wednesday games are awful normally, it provides some extra drama, but not too much, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I think maybe what I meant was that the committee would start considering the mid-majors over some of these other schools based on, you know, keeping it with 68 teams instead of putting in a school like Syracuse, which maybe isn't the best example since they're in the Sweet 16 now, but, you know, considering some of these mid-major schools over these Power 5 conference schools to be in the tournament, just because of the drama that they would provide. And you know, they certainly feel like they played well enough throughout the season. I don't really know if there's much to that, but, you know, I've just seen some people writing that, hey, it would be nice to see more mid-majors considered based on the fact that they can perform well against some of these schools, especially in a one-and-done. Just a thought, yeah. I had.
Well, you know that Pete's going to oppose it just based on the fact that it could mean some ACC teams don't get into the tournament. So.
Hey, someone's got to be the ACC homer on this.
That's right.
Why do you think I asked Josh That's to right. come on? I need another ACC guy in my corner.
One token ACC booster is not enough.
The more the merrier. The more the merrier.
The funny thing is that I went to college at William & Mary, which is one of four schools who's never been to the NCAA tournament. So, of course, I'm going to always wish for more mid-majors to get in the hopes that one day the William & Mary Tribe makes the big dance. They've been very close in their conference tournament, but never quite been able to close the door. So anyway, just wanted to pose that question. Thought it was interesting.
Well, on that note, we are out of time, so I'm going to wrap it up here. Josh, thanks so much for joining us on Third String Podcast. For our listeners, if you want to check out what he wrote, go to medium.com/thirdstring. His piece is our featured article where you can read more about his thoughts on the UVA basketball program and how he felt as a fan watching the loss. Josh, thanks for joining us to talk about college basketball. We look forward to having you back on the show again to talk sometime in the near future.
Thanks for having me.